Welcome to The Wagon, presented by SportClix, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.
Welcome once again to The Waggle Podcast, which is brought to you by us here at CFL.ca and brought to you by our friends at Sport Clips, because they love to give you their MVP haircut experience, which includes shampoo for the top of your head, making sure that hair is clean, hot steam towels for your face, for those cheeks, and sports on TV like hockey, baseball, basketball, and football. And right now, the only football on TV is NFL football, but we know CFL football will be coming sooner rather than later. And as we start 2021, yes, we made it. Congratulations. We wanted to bring one of the best players in the league, someone who's real topical right now, but also in the 2021 season, but also someone who actually could break down what we're seeing in the NFL. Cody Fajardo, the starting quarterback, the franchise quarterback, the extended quarterback for the Saskatchewan Roughriders, joins us to talk about what this pandemic has been like for him personally and his family, and why he's really, really looking forward to when it's all over and he's back on the field. That's up next on The Waggle. So one thing that we know on The Waggle Podcast is you can't go too long without having a writer on or someone tied to Saskatchewan football before the Rider Nation lets you know that they need someone who has recently worn green and white to be on the podcast. So of course, we will rectify that with the name that they've come to love and they've really been following closely. And that's Cody Fajardo, who I want to say, you know, congratulations first and foremost on your new deal and being in Saskatchewan for a bit longer.
You know, yeah, thank you. It's been a crazy 2020 for everybody, but 2021 started off great for my family and I. So obviously, signing that extra year of an extension, being tied with the team through the next 2 years, and most importantly, being with the team in a year that they're going to host the Grey Cup. That was something I was most excited for in 2020, because everybody knows what happened last time the Riders hosted the Grey Cup, and obviously, there's a lot of added pressure to when you host the Grey Cup, especially when the team before won the Grey Cup. So just excited to be a part of the team again. Like I've talked about, it was a no-brainer. J.O. and I weren't far off. I wasn't in any rush to sign the extension because we still have no idea what the season's going to look like, if we're going to be delayed or, you know, anything like that, what the salary cap's going to look like. But when we started talking the numbers, we weren't too far off, and it was just at that point a no-brainer to kind of stick with the green and white for another 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, it must feel nice on two sides. Obviously, nice to be wanted, but nice that they, you know, were willing to come to you and say, hey, we want to get something done. But also nice that they've done some business around you, and there's been some other free agency settings to show that, and not just at your position, but on the team, they're really trying to fortify things and be aggressive and a real player for the Grey Cup moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And something I really didn't realize when I was early in my career in the CFL, just being a backup or short yardage guy, is how much the team actually asks for input from, you know, a franchise quarterback. And those are things I'm still kind of getting used to when J.O. calls me and says, like, hey, what do you think about this guy and this guy? And they're really trying to build a team around me, the quarterback, and I've never had that the rock star treatment, I guess. I've always been the guy going into free agency, talking with my wife, like, well, are any teams going to call me or am I done playing football this year? And so, like you talked about, being wanted is a lot better than just being liked. And I definitely feel wanted and loved with the Rough Riders.
When you are giving that input, what are the criteria that you look through it? Is it scheme and role? Is it, you know, culture and fit with the group? Is it just potentially a pain to play against, so you want someone on your side and not on the opposition? how do you, as a talent evaluator, I suppose, look at, you know, the feedback that you're giving?
Yeah, I think the number one thing I personally look for is what type of guy are they in the locker room, off the field, on the field? Yes, I would love to get all the hard-hitting, trash-talking guys on my team because then I don't have to deal with that on a week-to-week basis. But I really believe that championships are won in the locker room. And when you have a group of guys that are really close-knit and together and really are playing for the guy next to them, I think that's when you see teams win championships. And I've been a part of, you know, a state championship in high school, WAC conference championship in college, and a Grey Cup championship. And the thing that stands out most of all three of those teams is how close they were in the locker room. There was like, hey guys, let's go, you know, bowling, or let's go to the movies, or let's do this. Everybody was doing things together. And then I've been on some teams, you know, that weren't very good, but very talented. But at the end of the day, you know, 1 o'clock strikes, everybody goes their own way, and there's no team camaraderie. So that's probably the number one thing I look for, is what type of guy they are, how they're going to fit in our locker room. Because the last thing you want to do is bring in a guy who's ultra talented, but maybe, you know, ticks off three or four guys in your locker room, and now you create this separation in your locker room, and that's just a recipe for disaster.
Well, and now that you are said franchise quarterback, it's part of your job to police the locker room if said issues happen. That locker room, you literally haven't been in it for a long time. Keeping that team camaraderie in a time when we're all literally socially distancing, and you've been away from the facility and for many cases from the city for a long time, what has that been like during this period?
Yeah, that's been the toughest part. And, you know, I've talked to a lot of retired quarterbacks or just retired CFL guys, NFL guys, and the number one thing they miss the most, and they say it time and time again, is the locker room. They say the big wins are great, you know, winning championships, unbelievable, but just those small stories that go on in a locker room, or, you know, those small times that you have going out, like I said, maybe going out to dinner the night before a game with some of your teammates, like those are the things that they miss the most. And for me, policing the locker room, I think that was something I was getting more comfortable as 2019 was going on. I still felt myself as the backup quarterback, and it wasn't until they traded Zach that I really felt like, okay. And now the players started looking at me and like, hey, Cody, this is your team now, right? And it was a situation I haven't been in since my senior year in college. So about 5 years since I was the guy in the locker room. So it took me a little bit, a while to get my sea legs back. And that was what I was looking most forward to in 2020, was stepping foot day one of training camp, being the guy and just taking on a bigger leadership role. And that was something I was really excited about. And obviously we all know what happened in 2020. So having a year without that, you still got to figure out ways to motivate other players. I think one of the biggest assets when I'm done playing football and I got to get a real job, not that football is not a real job, but just an office job or something like that, is putting on my resume. I have to get, you know, 110 football players, staff, everyone else with different personalities, all focused on one common goal and all getting along together. That's one thing that I think is experience that not a lot of people get the opportunity to have.
Yeah, you're essentially the CEO in a way of the team. I mean, the teams obviously have team presidents and CEOs, but essentially, if the team's going to be successful on the field, it's going to be because you started as a fifth stringer, far from that spot, and you've obviously ascended since, but you've been around a lot of really, really successful quarterbacks in that time as an apprentice. Now that you're in that role, are there anecdotes that you remember picking up from guys, or stories or guys specifically that you saw and not only learned the craft on the field but learned about how to lead a team?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And that's something, you know, I can pull something from every single quarterback I played with from my first years in Toronto through BC and now in Sask. There's something I can pull from every single guy. And just talking, you know, the bigger name guys, you look at a guy like Ricky Ray, something I got from him was how to handle yourself in the weight room, mobility-wise, taking care of your body. Here he is, a guy who was plagued with injuries towards the back half of his career, and in 2017 misses only one game. And he made a huge change in 2017 in his diet and in his, you know, foam rolling and his mobility stuff. And that was something I was able to watch firsthand. He's like, hey, this is the first time I'm trying this. And every other year before that, you know, he missed a handful of games. And now you see him miss one game and win the Grey Cup. So something I've definitely done and did the same diet thing I'm trying to do this year, and a lot of the mobility stuff he does. You go over to BC, a guy like Travis Lule, how he handled himself with the media, how he handled himself getting back from an injury, and how he handled himself as, you know, even though he wasn't the starter at the time, John Jennings was the starter, he was the backup, and he was just full supportive until he got his opportunity. And then he's like, yep, I got to go out there and win football games. And so just seeing how he portrayed himself in the quarterback room to John, to myself, to Ricky Lloyd, who was also there, was something I think I took greatly. And also how he handled the media. And I think he's one of the best at being honest and upfront and just telling the media everything they can, because that's how fans connect with the players. And then you go to Sask and spending the time with Zach and just his mind, his football IQ, and just watching him watch film and break down defenses is something I learned so much. And so it was really cool, my storyline, or I guess my journey of having to be able to cross paths with all those quarterbacks who have different strengths, different weaknesses, and trying to just pluck one thing and add it to my toolbox, So I was pretty blessed with the lineage of quarterbacks that I got to go through over the last 5-6 years.
You mentioned health. And you know, last time we saw you on a football field, you were banged up. You were gutting it out. One of, I suppose, the unintended consequences that's a positive of this period is, you know, guys can get a little bit healthier. What's your body like now relative to when you ended the last season?
Yeah, that's for me, I've been playing football since I was 6 years old, and I haven't missed 1 year. So you got to think, you know, I'm 28 now, turning 29 in March. So 22 years of football, year after year after year, it takes a wear and tear on your body. And there were some years where, you know, I was just a backup quarterback, but still doing short yardage stuff. You're still taking hits. I was on the punt team, still feeling sore after games. But yeah, right now my body has never felt, I guess, healthier, especially when you lose a year of prime football, your prime age, you know, 25 through 28, I would assume is for quarterbacks, at least maybe all the way to 30, 33 is your prime football age. And missing a year really sucks, but having a whole year off definitely benefits me in terms of my body. Now, the one thing that concerns me, and I'm sure it concerns a lot of people, is their mind, right? Is being able to go out there and sit in a pocket again, feeling pressure around you, taking a hit as you're trying to throw the ball. I felt like I was in such great rhythm in 2019, for the first time in my career, of just sitting in the pocket, not looking to run. And now you have a whole year off, and now you got to go out there and retrain some of these muscle memory things with your mind, and not feeling that sense of happy feet in the pocket.
So with all this abundance of times, I mean, there's two things you could do. You could be bitter about it, or you could kind of use the time to get better. What have you tried to do to make up for the fact that you're not getting those live reps, so that when you are called again, you're as close to optimal as possible?
Yeah, I think the number one thing I've been trying to do is get a hold of Coach Moss's offense, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is we were trying to implement a brand new offense in a crazy time of COVID, and we never even got to get live reps on it, right? So there's a few things I do with some of the local receivers here is just run some of our concepts that are new to me in Coach Moss's offense. Because I'm trying to get as many reps on hand as I can, so that when I get to training camp, yes, the timing may be different because I'll have my guys, my actual receivers, going out there and running the routes. But in terms of the repetition of the drop and the throw and the location of the throw, that's something I've been trying to just get down, because going into a year when you're trying to learn a brand new offense, you're trying to replicate a great year in 2019, and you're also 1 year of just kind of sitting around and not playing any contact or physical football, is a lot of things that play into account. So just trying to get as many reps as I can, whether it's mentally looking at the notes Coach Moss has for me, or whether it's physically and actually going out there and throwing. But I think those are the two things that if I can hit the ground running, because I've put in this time of getting to know the offense, where when I get to the line of scrimmage, I say, hey, I know exactly what this play is. You know, in 2020, I threw this 40 times in a row out in Reno, and I feel comfortable with it. And so that's just getting myself back to that comfortability is my ultimate goal.
So in a normal off season, you could do one-on-ones, stuff on air, some Pascally, as much as possible. You'd be out there slinging it every day. Obviously now nothing is normal, and you're trying to do that amidst the global pandemic. What have you had to do to make sure that you're keeping yourself and the guys who are trying to get better with you safe?
Yeah, and that's the hard part, right? Is I would love to go out there and do footwork stuff, but if I don't throw the ball at all, then it's like, you know, footwork's great, but it's all about throwing the ball and the repetition of throwing the ball. So a lot of times you don't want to put other receivers in harm's way, like hey, I need you to come out here to catch balls, and I'll only ask the receivers in this local area if they feel comfortable doing it. Never put them in a situation, because you're exactly right, safety is first and foremost. Currently at this time, the receiver quarterback relationship is so big, and I am somebody, normally in a normal off season, I don't throw the ball. I don't even pick up a ball until about March after the season. You know, I let my right arm fully just recover, and I found myself throwing the ball a lot more often now. Some quarterbacks are big time throwers where they want to throw every day, you know, two times a week, three times a week. There's some quarterbacks, I talked to KG on our podcast, and he was talking about how he would barely throw maybe once a month, you know? So it all works for different quarterbacks. I'm one of those same guys where I don't throw often, but I found myself throwing a lot more than normal because I'm trying to get those repetitions back, you know, trying to get those throwing back, because it's been a full year since I've got a live rep of football.
What have you learned about yourself during this period?
I think the number one thing I learned is how much I love football and how much I miss football. You know, the little things you take for granted when you get it year in and year out. The small things, the locker room talk, you know, feeling sore after games, pulling up to the stadium, running out of the tunnel, like those are all fun things. But the rehab that it takes, you know, after a game, like I talked about, going ice tub and hot tub and getting stretched and stem and just finding ways to keep your body healthy as you can to reset for a game day on, say, Saturday. And then you got to do it all over again. You know, the practice. But I think the number one thing is the competitive atmosphere. I knew I was a competitive person, and my wife and my friends tell me that all the time, that I'm very competitive. But I've missed just competing. And so I'll find myself competing in little things, whether it's board games or, you know, eating contests or you name it. I'm just trying to find myself to fill that void of competition. So that's what I definitely learned. And I learned that I'm not done with football. There was a few years ago, maybe BC, before I signed with Sask, and my last year in Toronto, I was kind of, you know, is this worth it? Do I really want to play football? Do I really want to just stand on the sideline and continue to do punt team, continue to do short yardage, or should I just get on with my life? Was a hard decision for me to make. And I realized this year, above all years, I'm not ready to give it up. And I would, you know, give anything to, even if I was a short yardage guy for 2020 football, give anything to be back on the field. That was the number one thing I learned, I think, especially for myself, was I'm not ready to give football up.
What kept you going and interested in playing at that point? Because many of the things that we ask ourselves to do in this football community are not necessarily all that rational, right? Like the, yeah. if you really took a step outside of it, you know, many guys who have been, you know, wedge breakers when that was a thing on you know, special teams for a while, and the return on investment on that's probably not that great, but we still do it. What kept you doing it?
Yeah, two things. The relationships that I built with the players in the locker room was by far the number one thing that kept me going in. And especially being able to meet new people on a year-to-year basis, because there's so much change in a CFL roster from year to year, right? With guys signing 1 and 2 year deals, that it's not like the NFL where you maybe bring in a handful of new guys and you kind of have the same core guys. Usually in the CFL, especially if you have a successful team, you see a huge overhaul because guys, you know, end up signing with more money on the less talented teams. So with that being said, that was one thing that kept me pushing. Another thing was the winning locker room and just celebrating with so much hard work, you know, the sweat, the blood, the tears at time, like those things. And then you come out and you win a football game. It is very hard to win a professional football game. And it doesn't matter what the team's record is. Everybody's a professional, and that's why there's a salary cap for a reason, because it keeps the teams even. And yes, some teams are better than others. But I think the winning locker rooms and the relationships I had with guys were the two things that was like, I'm going to try and do this as long as I can, because this is pretty cool getting to know guys that are, you know, 5 to 10 years older than me, and guys that are five years younger than me. Just a plethora of different personalities, different experiences, different life experiences. And I learned so much from guys that were older and younger from me. And that's what kept me in it through the dark days.
I think it's fair to say that this has been longer and tougher than most people expected. March 11th or 12th, whenever things got shut down in 2020. How has this experience been like for you and your family?
Yeah, very hard. If you talk about what just kept me through the dark days in football, right, was the relationships with people. And now you're self-isolated. The huge positive for me was having my wife. But the hard part, so when the pandemic first hit, we were in D.C. We stayed in a little one-bedroom apartment in D.C. So she was doing all of her schooling from home, which was great because I got to spend a lot of time with her. And most of the time throughout my 5 years in the CFL, five or six years in the CFL, we were long distance relationship. And I tell people this all the time. When my wife and I met in college, that was the first 2 years we were, you know, with each other. But then after that, once I left college, we've been long distance the entire time. So we've been together, I think, 8 years now, married for going on 2 years, but 8 years of long distance relationship where I'm talking, you know, different countries, different time zones. And so that was something I was like, okay, well, this pandemic hit, at least I'll get some quality time with my wife, which I did. I got about a month and a half. And then my wife went off to her clinical part of her job, where she has three clinicals. She went to Texas first for 10 weeks. Then she went to SoCal for 12 weeks. And then she's in Reno now for her last 12 before she graduates in May. But she was gone, right? And so here I am in a pandemic where she's gone, and now I'm just kind of sitting by myself, can't see people, can't do anything. Found myself working out a lot, playing a lot of video games, but it was lonely, it was quiet, a lot of time to self-reflect on some things, but it was definitely hard for me to be at home, can't see my family, can't see my wife, can't go out and just enjoy being outside, and the competitive nature that I have. So that was tough. And now that we're in a position where my wife is back in Reno, we bought a house here in May. So things are a lot better now. But there were some definitely dark days that I leaned a lot on the Lord. I leaned a lot on the Bible, on just prayer, getting me through those tough times, because without football, without my wife, it was a very lonely time for me.
Yeah, I can imagine. It sounds like it. And, you know, certainly, like, if he can kind of bring you to it, he can bring you through it. So it's great that you're in a much better place now. And you have that support system, your wife and your family, to help get through the tough times. Before I let you go, though, because I do think your position is so unique, so special, that even people who play the sport, even other football people, can't really tell you about the secret sauce of quarterbacking. And so we're going to make you an analyst for a little bit, until we can see you play some CFL football. Why don't we start with the two 40-year-olds? Tom Brady and Drew Brees are playing in the divisional playoffs on Sunday. What about each of those guys makes them really go?
I'll start with Tom Brady. And you look at a team like the Bucs, who didn't have a massive overhaul in their team, didn't have a change at coaching. They really changed one position, and it was Tom Brady, right? And just the hope and the inspiration that was inflicted in that locker room when you signed Tom Brady, and now you're seeing this Bucs team who is winning football games and now is playing in a divisional championship game. It goes to show how much relies on quarterbacks to get you where you are, and why investing in quarterbacks is so important to winning football games. And now, you know, you put him against Jameis Winston, a guy who threw 30 touchdowns, but also threw 30 picks. And I don't know exactly how many interceptions Tom Brady has, but I know it's nowhere near 30. So you got to think about all the drives that were saved by Tom being smart with the football. I think that's his best attribute as a quarterback, is being very smart with the football. He does not turn it over as often. He had, you know, a couple games where he turned it over maybe 3 or 4 times, but those are the anomaly. Usually on a week-to-week basis, he's going to get you down the field. He's going to put you in field goal range, or he's going to strike with a touchdown. So his leadership and his protecting of the ball has definitely got the Bucs where they're at. In terms of Drew Brees, somebody I look up to highly, a guy who has battled injuries the last 2 years. His best attribute for him is his mind. He has seen every defense, as Tom Brady has too, but he's seen every defense, and it's a little bit different for Drew Brees because he's been in the same division for so long. Tom Brady just switched divisions, so now he's seeing new defenses for the first time and playing different teams multiple times in a year. Drew Brees has been with the Saints for a while, so he knows everybody's in his division's defense and what they're going to do. I think his biggest attribute is his accuracy. Yes, he can't throw the deep ball, but he can put it on the perfect shoulder at the perfect time when he needs it. And also, he's really good at getting his running backs involved. I think the biggest mismatch in NFL is the running backs on linebackers. You have a lot of these running linebackers who are built to just stop the run. And now you have guys like Alvin Kamara who can catch the ball in the backfield and score anytime he catches, you know, a 2-yard flat route, a check down. So I think he's very good at getting his running backs involved and using that mismatch to help him. So I would say, just to reiterate, Tom Brady, his leadership and protecting the football are his two biggest assets. And for Drew Brees, it's getting his matchups involved, running back on linebacker, and his accuracy.
Okay, so we've got Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs taking on the Browns at 3:05 Eastern on Sunday. And Mahomes is like the closest thing to someone playing with the creativity and the multiple arm slots that you see in the CFL game. And then Baker Mayfield has really done a good job of keeping the Browns on schedule. When you watch those two guys, what do you see?
Yeah, I'll start with Baker. First and foremost, one of my closest friends, Joel Bitonio, is an offensive lineman for the Browns. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler. I think that's Baker's biggest asset is his offensive line. Baker is this is obviously all my opinion, but Baker is one of those guys, I think he feeds off of energy. And you watch that Steelers-Browns game and this first snap over the head. Once that happens, you know, Baker is deadly when the positive energy is on his side. There's been times in games when he's made mistakes because there's been a lot of pressure on him. But he's one of the top quarterbacks when he can just go out there and perform without the pressure behind him. Being a quarterback for the Browns, I can only imagine how much pressure is filled with that just in the job title. But what one thing I think Baker does really well is bootleg, throwing on the run. He's got two great running backs that excel the run, a good offensive line. So getting him on the edge and making throws. But I think his biggest asset is when things are going great, he's one of the top players in the league. So that's something that the Browns have to continue to do is make sure that they don't get down 21 points or they don't get down 14 points, because now a lot of more pressure on a Brown starting quarterback. Transitioning over to Patrick Mahomes, he's just a once in a generational talent. And I train quarterbacks here in the Reno area, and I've had to add a few drills that are off platform throws, arm slot throws, because of him. And they go out and they watch him. And I want the quarterbacks here to understand it's not as easy as he makes it look. To throw the ball 40 yards down the field from a sidearm pocket is really ridiculous, to be honest. Or you see him roll out and he throws across his body for a 50-yard touchdown. And it's hard for me as a coach, as a player, who's thrown things across my body and have never thrown a touchdown across my body. Usually they're intercepted or bad throws, right? And just the things he gets away with because he's got such a great arm talent. Also, being the guy in Kansas City, a lot of people look up to him. He's an MVP. He's a Super Bowl champ. He's already got the resume, and he's only been in the league for a couple years now. But I think his biggest asset, to tell you the truth, was sitting behind Alex Smith. and not being forced into playing. And you see a lot of these young guys being forced into playing. And I know from my personal experience, if I had to go in my first year in the CFL and go play quarterback, I would probably be out of the league without a doubt. But the fact that I was able to sit, I had to be patient, but the fact that I was able to sit and just learn helped me when I got my opportunity in 2019 just to kind of flourish. So I think that's one of his biggest assets aside from his arm. So to reiterate, going back, I think Baker does a great job of using the talent around him and not making it seem like he has to win the football game. That's his number one thing, is he just understands if he gets the ball into his playmaker's hands, they're going to be competitive. And then Patrick Mahomes being able to just use his arm slot and just to make these wacky throws and to have receivers who understand, hey, let's have this scramble drill. Mahomes is going to find us and we're going to move the ball down the field is definitely one of his greatest strengths.
Two guys who like you, the fact that they can add into the run game can make them effective. And one, and Josh Allen really came onto the scene this year in a big way, like you did. Ravens going to Buffalo, so that means Lamar Jackson versus Josh Allen. What do you see when you watch them play?
Yeah, starting off with Lamar Jackson, he is incredibly talented and incredibly fast. I've never seen a guy run full speed and make a cut, and that's what Lamar Jackson can do. And we saw that in the Titans game last week. It's just truly incredible what he can do. And a lot of people like to knock him for his arm, but he's got plenty of arm talent. And when he can get a couple completions or make a couple big runs and he settles into a game, he is by far one of the top quarterbacks in the league. I think a lot of times they talk about how they can't play from behind. So that's the number one thing, is not going down and getting away from what they do best. They do the best of running the ball, throwing a lot of window dressing at you, motions, fakes here, Lamar runs it, and then getting the tight ends involved. I think he's very deadly with his feet. Obviously, everybody knows that, but I think he's also very good at getting his tight ends involved. Mark Andrews has been one of the top tight ends in the league since Lamar took over. And anytime you got a big body like that and you can get him involved, you're going to be pretty successful. Moving on to Josh Allen, I find myself kind of imitating my game to him more and more as the years progress and the more I watch him. This is the most I've ever watched him this year. And I find myself kind of trying to tailor-made my game a little bit towards him, because he's an incredible runner. He can throw the ball on the run. He can sit in the pocket. Now, he's 6'5", and he's got a cannon for an arm, so that's something I'll never be able to have. But for him, I think his biggest strength is his arm talent and being able to improvise plays. Now, him and Lamar are a little bit different. Lamar will take off and run for, you know, a 60-yard touchdown. Josh Allen will take off and run for 12 yards on third and 11 and get the first down. And there's nothing more frustrating, I think, for defensive coordinators than when you have a team backed up third and 12 and they drop into, you know, eight guys dropping coverage, or nine if you're in the CFL, and the quarterback takes off and runs for 12 yards and a first down. Like, that is very frustrating. And so his biggest thing is him extending plays, but also being able to throw on the run and throw the ball, stretch the field. You know, how do you play the Bills? Do you play them stopping the run, or do you play them stopping the deep ball threat? I think they can challenge the Chiefs in terms of the greatest show on turf and put the points up. And then going over to Lamar, being able to just, every time he touches the ball, he can score. And that's just a gift that only God gives you. And so those two guys, it'll be a very exciting game to watch, because those two guys are going to light up the scoreboard and make a lot of plays with their feet and with their arm. That's going to change the outlook on what quarterbacks do, not just drop back and throw from the pocket. They have to do a lot more than that.
And lastly, two guys who do most of their work from the pocket, you know, Jared Goff in Los Angeles, California, and the California kid in Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers. Now, obviously, you can appreciate what it would be like for Goff with a pin placed in his thumb just a couple weeks ago, and now he's doing center handoff exchanges and having that thumb banged, and obviously Rodgers might be the MVP of the league. What do you see when you watch those two guys play?
Yeah, I'll start with Goff. I can't imagine playing a game. He was, what, maybe 10 days off of surgery, 12 days off of surgery, which is like unheard of. And then to go out there and play at a high level, to beat Seattle in Seattle, that's really hard to do, albeit there was no fans, but to go over there and beat Russell Wilson in his home stadium with pins in your and plates in your thumb is pretty incredible. I think Goff, Goff's biggest strength is Coach McVay. McVay's going to put him in great situations and have a game plan that's going to be tailor-made to his strengths. And I think we see that on a week-to-week basis. And I think we saw that with Wolford when he played the Cardinals. He's going to be able to change the offense as much as he can to help the quarterback out. So I think what Goff's really good at is play action. He's really good at selling the play action and taking shots down the field. He's got incredible receivers that can go make a play for him. But I definitely think his confidence is improving from what I've seen over the last couple of years. But his biggest strength, like I said, is play action, taking a shot, or sometimes he'll try and run. But for the most part, he sits in the pocket and does everything from there. And then moving over to Aaron Rodgers, man, he's just played at such a high level for so long. And he's one of those guys that has like a, you know, he can flick the ball and it goes 60, 70 yards down the field. Aaron Rodgers' biggest asset for me, I think, is understanding what he does the best. And I think his fiery competition is his biggest asset. He gets fired up now on the sideline. He'll get in people's faces, and you can tell when Aaron Rodgers is flustered. You can tell when he's feeling it. And I think that feeds off to the team for sure. But he's one of those guys that there's no defense for Aaron Rodgers. It's how do we slow this guy down, not how do we stop this guy. So that game, I'm leaning, you know, huge on the Packers. I think that with the Rams being banged up, that Aaron Rodgers is going to definitely take advantage of a banged up Rams team.
Now, enough playoff football talk in the NFL. We are hoping and waiting for more playoff football in the CFL. And lastly, before I let you go, you know, I've thought of the upcoming season and how, from people being, you know, back to work in and around stadiums to having that distraction to watch the games a couple nights a week, to the atmosphere that's it's going to be like when people can hopefully congregate together and watch games. You know, a lot of it's going to be crazy, but in your neck of the country specifically, in Saskatchewan, in Regina, I feel like every week is going to feel like the Grey Cup after people have been without it for so long. Imagine what the actual Grey Cup week is going to be like. Have you allowed yourself to think about, given, you know, what everyone's been through, what it's going to be like to be back playing football and for the game's championship and its trophy to be back in, you know, the place where it means the most in Canada?
You know, I've tried and I don't think I can. I don't think I could do it justice, to tell you the truth. Part of the reason why I signed my extension with the Riders was because the first game I started, the home opener, I believe it was against Toronto. And I remember running out of the tunnel. Everybody was waving towels. And I was thinking, is this a playoff game? Because it was just an electric atmosphere. And it was something I'll remember for the rest of my life. Moving forward, I think what the CFL fans are going to be rewarded with through this long wait is the caliber of play. A week one, week two, week three game is going to feel like a Grey Cup game, exactly what you talked about. I think the players being healthy off of 1 year, missing it after 1 year, are just going to go out there and guys are going to be throwing their bodies around because that is what's fun for them and that's what they've missed most. And so I can see those first couple weeks being just absolutely competitive, very close games, and a lot more like Grey Cup aspect, like high intensity, high energy. I just hope we can get a full crowd at these places. And what I think I'm really excited about and what I hope happens is in some of the places that might not get the fans like we do, that they show out because they miss the CFL so much, right? So you see packed stadiums around the whole league, and it's not just, you know, in Sask, in Winnipeg, in Ottawa, like that, right? It's all over. The entire country is just kind of lit on fire and can't wait to see some CFL games. And I definitely think going out to the games that these fans will be rewarded, because I think the games are going to be highly competitive and very fun to watch. Big plays. You know, when you sit out for a year, you think, you know, people just can't wait to score their first touchdown, or they can't wait to get their first sack or their first tackle or their first catch, you know. So those everything's going to be a first in a year, which is really crazy to think about. And so I'm just excited. I can't fathom I can't even draw up or dream up what I think it'll be like to run out of Mosaic Stadium to a packed, packed house. But I guess I'm just going to have to wait for that moment. And I get chills when I think about it, to tell you the truth, because it's going to be a very exciting time for not only the players, but the fans as well, because they've been hurting as much as the players have, right? I've had so many fans reach out to me and talk about how they have traditions of, you know, the only time I get to see my family is the Labor Day game. We go every single year. Or the only time I ever spend time with my dad is we go to every single Ryder home game. And I miss that, you know. Those are the things, the traditions that have been built by the fans. I think that they've been going through it the hardest, because without CFL football, a lot of traditions that they've had for years and years and years all came to a halt because we didn't get to play. So I'm just excited to hear the more stories, the generational fans in Saskatchewan and hopefully all over the CFL. And I'm excited to travel again to different places. I love going to BC and eating sushi, or I love going to Toronto and you know, trying, you know, a nice steak or some lobster or something like that, right? So those are the things I think I miss most, and I can't wait to get back to travel and be with the team and just to run out of stadiums to packed houses.
Well, with that new contract, when you go to BC and Toronto, you know, some of the guys on the team, especially that O-line that protects you, might be looking at you to pick up the bill. But I'm excited to see you back in the saddle, whether it's, you know, getting those feet through trash and having guys hanging off you and throwing a dime, or pulling it down and running and it stretching for the corner of the pylon. It's great to see you playing and smiling, and most importantly, putting lots of smiles on the faces of those fans that you mentioned. Thank you so much for talking to those fans via us on this podcast. This was really fun.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on, and any way I can help this league flourish, because I'll say it over and over, I'm indebted to the CFL. Without the CFL, I wouldn't be playing football, and I realized what a year without football was. It was tough on me, so I want to play as long as I can, and the only way I can do that is if the CFL is here and around and the fans are supporting us.
Man, what a great conversation with Cody. No matter what team you cheer for, no matter what your colors are, it's tough to root against that guy. I'm so happy he's not only got his opportunity, but he's made the most of it, and now he's trying to make the most of his platform by sharing how much he loves the great league that is the CFL, the league that I love as well. So I love him for it. I also love you for listening. Thank you for making it this long. And thank you for your continued feedback on who you want to hear and what you want us to talk about. You can find us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at CFL is the handle. I am Donovan Bennett. And while you're on your phone or your computer or whatever device you happen to be using to get this here podcast, feel free to like, to favorite, to share, and to subscribe. Leave us a rating. 5 stars would be appreciated. And also leave us a comment, because ultimately, as Cody said, we do this for you. Until next time, thanks for listening.
The WAG, presented by Sportclips, the official podcast of the Canadian Football League.